Hello, listeners. Welcome to the year 2020, and welcome to Politico's Nerdcast. I'm your host, Scott Bland. In the spirit of this new year, which also starts a new decade, we wanted to take a look at the defining political moments from the last four decades, the 1980s, the 1990s, the 2000s, the 2010s. And then after that, we're going to talk a little bit about what the 2020s might look like, which, given all the developments of this decade, we may have to use our imaginations a little bit. To do all that, I am joined by ace Politico reporter and, more importantly, fellow history nerd Darren Samuelson, who's here in the studio. Darren, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I brought my gray beard to this occasion to talk with you.
All right. Well, in the spirit of that, let's hit the rewind button. Let's go all the way back to the 1980s and go through some of the really defining political stuff here. Obviously, this is the Reagan era.
Thanks very much.
The Gorbachev era.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The end of the Cold War and the fall of communism.
Where the East German authorities have said, in essence, that the Berlin Wall doesn't mean anything anymore.
Those are kind of like the headline items.
Yeah, absolutely. These are the defining moments of the 1980s. I think anytime you ask anyone about the 1980s, they will start with Ronald Reagan elected and taking office in 1981 amid the Iran hostage crisis, amid a economic time that is sort of coming out of the Jimmy Carter era. It's seen as stagnating, and Reagan launches into a very productive decade for America. And in that same period of time, Ronald Reagan, over the course of the decade, oversees sort of the collapse of communism, which doesn't ultimately end up happening until George H.W. Bush becomes president there in 89. But in the course of the 80s, Ronald Reagan, in his negotiations and his efforts to try and bring the Soviet Union to the table, has summits with Mikhail Gorbachev, who Americans come to see quite well and get to know. As American people, it's a time where there is a lot of concern at the decade starts about, the end of the world, global nuclear war.
Let's play global thermonuclear war.
The movie War Games, this was a hugely popular movie. All I remember, right. I'm only 9 years old at the time, but, Matthew Broderick, basically stops a computer from launching nuclear missiles that are going to, end the world as we know it. There was another movie on ABC News or ABC TV that everyone remembers called The Day After that, as a kid, parents wouldn't let you watch it because it was so scary. But that was sort of the mood of the 80s.
The interesting thing about all this that we're bringing – and this is going to be a theme as we now work our way forward through the decades. But all these things we're talking about, they didn't just define that particular decade the way Reagan and Gorbachev and the fall of communism defined the 1980s. But they also set the terms – of what defines the future decades. Reagan and the ideas around him dominated American politics, and both the Republican Party and the way Democrats set themselves up in response for the decades to come.
Yeah, that's right. The Republican power of the 80s. I mean, Reagan is the president. He's working with a Democratic Congress for that entire decade too, which is a fascinating thing to kind of keep in mind. The Democrats would be out of power coming out of the Jimmy Carter years, which was a sort of an aberration there after Nixon and Watergate and Ford. And the Democrats won't take power again until the early part of the 90s with Bill Clinton, when he unseats a one-term president in George H.W. Bush, who obviously had designs to be president going all the way back to 1980 and losing to Ronald Reagan. So yeah, the political dynamics and the power structures of the 80s. I mean, the way I remember growing up is, I don't know that I necessarily thought of Ronald Reagan as a Republican. I thought of him just as the president of the United States. Obviously, as a kid, you probably see things a little bit differently than when you become an adult. But I think Reagan maybe crossed over parties, and a lot of people in the years afterwards didn't really necessarily see him as a Republican or Democrat. Just saw him as an American leader, as a TV star, movie actor who becomes the president of the United States, and a great orator who leads the country through these kind of very scary times at the beginning of the decade. And obviously things get very harried as the decade goes on, and the Iraq War, the first Iraq War, begins there at the
very end.
Yeah, or I should say it kicks into the early part of the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's move right into the 90s. This is how we do it. I mean, like you said, it starts with the Persian Gulf War and a very popular George H.W. Bush. But that's not what defines this decade, because as you said, he goes on to lose re-election to Bill Clinton.
The first baby boomer president and sort of a new generation of American political leaders, sort of the handing off from George H.W. Bush, sort of seen as a World War II someone connected to World War II, connected to an earlier generation of Americans. Bill Clinton comes in as a very young president with a young family with him, Hillary Clinton. His vice president, Al Gore, is also very young, and I think the country sort of starts to look ahead to the next decade and to the turn of the century. But throughout the 90s, Clinton brings a whole new bustle to government, ways to try and redefine government. This was one of Al Gore's initiatives there in the 90s, was reinventing government. And, they had big ideas. They didn't necessarily succeed. The biggest, most famous example would be Hillary Clinton's attempts to try and pass a major healthcare overhaul that collapses of its own weight in the early part of the Clinton administration. And, they also tried to deal with major energy issues there at the beginning of the 90s. And that runs into the Republican Revolution that comes in the mid-90s, in the 1994 midterms, and where we see the rise of the Republican Party again with Newt Gingrich and the GOP.
Yeah, in some ways, Bill Clinton's enduring political legacies is the Republican Revolution that was inspired in opposition to him.
Yeah, I mean, we learn of the Newt Gingrich he runs in 1994 on the Contract with America, which is sort of this pledge of things that he's going to try and implement to direct the country in a different way. You have this huge clash between Newt Gingrich and the Republicans in the House and Bill Clinton, which continues all the way through the entire decade. And, Clinton is dealing with domestic terrorism. The Oklahoma City bombings are happening, the Unabomber.
Atlanta Olympics,
Waco, and David Koresh. These moments that happen, these are sort of the first 24/7 news cycle moments too that people are watching in real time on CNN. Primarily, this is still an era when NBC and ABC and CBS would break into, regularly scheduled programming to tell us of something that's happening. But CNN is giving this news in a constant way. And I think Americans are starting to slowly, absorb the world that we live in today. But, it's starting to happen there in the 90s. And of course, this leads into.
Well, absolutely. And also just at the end of the 90s, that's when we start to get the internet. We start to get the fears about kind of this new wave of technology also kind of manifesting in the Y2K concerns and stuff like that. We're starting to see that bubble up. And I think in the next decade, we'll see a lot of that recede in the phases. Oh, wow, this technological advancement.
But there's that clash in the 90s because I was a journalism student in the 90s, still writing for a print newspaper and the beginnings of the dot-com era of trying to get your head around, I'm writing for an online news service and what does that mean versus writing for a print newspaper with a deadline and, things stopped at 6 o'clock in the evening and you couldn't get anything else in the morning newspaper after that. And so, yeah, the rise of the internet, obviously the Drudge Report is around in 1997, 98, 99, which breaks, the Monica Lewinsky story in a way that print news wasn't able to. So we saw the beginnings of the power of the internet there. At the end, everyone starts to get their first email addresses. AOL is dropping its disks into your mailbox constantly. You just have this stack of leftover AOL disks that I'm sure a lot of people remember.
Had mail, literally.
Yes, you did have mail, literally.
And all this, especially the chaos of the impeachment and that kind of whirling dervish of a news cycle after news cycle after news cycle around that leads us, I think, into the Bush presidency, the second Bush presidency and the 2000s, where George W. Bush really sold himself in that campaign as I don't think the actual phrase return to normalcy was used. I think that was from a different era, but that's very much the way he was selling himself.
Restore dignity, I think, to the White House was the message of 2000. And you really have to start the 2000s with Bush versus Gore.
A big call to make. CNN announces that we call Florida in the Al Gore column. This
is stand by. CNN right now is moving our earlier declaration of Florida back to the too close to call column. That George Walker Bush has won Florida's 25 electoral votes.
I mean, this is the first contested presidential election.
I think we can hardly believe our ears. He said, until the results are official and certified in the state of Florida, we are going to continue our campaign.
It drags on for a month. I remember it incredibly well because I actually arrived in Washington, D.C., moving from the other Washington, drove across the country. I left the day after the presidential election, drove across the country without knowing who the president of the United States was going to be, arrives in D.C., and the Supreme Court is just about to rule on Bush v. Gore. So you have this protracted period of time where we don't know who is going to be president.
And folks, in the year 2004, please, could you make up your minds a little more conclusively? Because I think we can't take another election like this one.
And then all of a sudden, it is George W. Bush and the end of the Clinton legacy.
Right. And then, of course, what he ran on in 2000 ends up being completely subsumed by the events of the next year. I'm talking 9/11, and the rise of the war on terror.
Sure. So, I mean, the first 9 months of the Bush presidency before 9/11 is all about this toxic political environment. The Democrats are just so upset with the way that election was played out. And it is bitter. The president actually loses the Senate when Jim Jeffords flips and becomes an independent.
I will leave the Republican Party and become an independent.
And we go from a completely Republican-dominated Congress to the Democrats suddenly have control there.
Control of the Senate will be changed by my decision.
In the summer of 2001, thanks to one senator who flips, you know, the power dynamics. And then 9/11 happens and the whole country kind of does come together in this unifying response to this awful, awful, awful event that happens on live television where people are watching in real time, you know, just tragic, tragic events. And, you know, the whole political world changes in 2001 at the end of that year as all of the attention shifts to Homeland Security and fortifying your water systems, your power plants, your chemical facilities, your transportation infrastructure. You know, the TSA becomes a thing. You no longer can go and check into an airport right away. And that is the Bush, you know, years are defined by that. And the 2002 election is defined by that. It is a launching of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars as well.
Yeah, of course. And I was going to, you know, you mentioned the unity that the country was feeling in that moment. I think a unity that led down some paths that people regret.
I can't remember another
in retrospect.
A unifying time since then. And I've been in Washington now for 20 years. I mean, maybe there was a feeling after Obama's elected at the end of the 2000s. For just a brief moment, like, mm-hmm. you know, America has transcended its history, electing the first African-American president. But other than that, you know, I can't recall of something that is quite the same as the way the country felt. You know, the singing of, I think it was God Bless America, you know, on the steps of the Capitol, the way the World Series played out there in 2001 with the Yankees and the Diamondbacks and Mayor Giuliani throwing out, you know, the first pitch. You know, there was this feeling, again, that a lot of people say Bush squanders by going into the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And actually, it's not even realized at the time because I think people were okay with it. We're okay with
right.
both wars. And it wasn't until, you know, the years go on and the wars start to drag on that you really start to – you have some major political questions because especially with Iraq, that it's seen as a war that wasn't necessarily started on the right premise.
Yeah. Certainly Afghanistan was more popular to begin with. And Iraq – even by the time you get to the 2004 presidential election, that's a main piece of the presidential election. But obviously neither of those wars has fared – any better over time in the course of public opinion. And of course, we're, you know, still involved today. And, those weren't kind of the only disastrous events of the 2000s. There was Hurricane Katrina. There was the rise of social media.
Mm-hmm.
little joke there. we'll get back to that in a second. But then, of course, all of this leads into Barack Obama's election in 2008. It's impossible to and obviously he's historic in his own right, but it's impossible to kind of get to that point without all the war and hardship of those preceding years.
And that's politics, and presidential politics in a nutshell is typically the next president is the exact opposite of the president before, and Barack Obama is everything that George W. Bush is not. And you can even see it in Barack Obama overcoming Hillary Clinton in the 2008 primaries to become the nominee is transcending sort of the Democratic divides and looking away from the Clinton years to some, you know, hope and change was his mantra, and that was the goal. And I mean, Obama has handed the keys as the economy is collapsing, as the housing bubble is bursting. I mean, those are the defining moments of the end of the Bush presidency as the Congress is trying to bail out the banks and trying to come up with some sort of economic recovery plans. And Barack Obama with all these, you know, ideas, bold ideas on transforming the country's healthcare and energy systems have to struggle for oxygen with keeping the economy from completely cratering and tanking while also ending the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, or attempting to, which is, you know, his campaign was largely driven by that. So it's amazing, yeah, how these, you know, the decades are defining stop points, but things just bleed in mm-hmm. and out of each other.
Well, and the especially when, you know, the 2000s, it was a hard decade. It was marked at the beginning by 9/11 and these wars, like national security hardships, bleeding into economic hardship, severe economic hardship at the end of the decade, and that leads us into the next one.
Yeah, I think the American people definitely suffer at the beginning of the decade through, you know, fears of terrorism. Obviously, it was just a very painful decade to begin, and yeah, from an economic, from a bottom line standpoint, the people who lose their jobs, who, you know, don't see you know, their careers going in the trajectory that they are, they're losing their retirement savings. I mean, the stock market collapsing like it does. I mean, it's all kind of part and parcel of a very rough 2000s decade. It's definitely not the uplifting experience that you know came at the start of 2000 when, you know, when the millennium changes over, and also as Obama comes into the presidency with all these promises. You know, the reality on the ground is not the same.
And a couple of the – just we mentioned briefly some of the technological changes in the 2000s, the rise of social media, the rise of cell phones and smartphones especially. And these are things, again, you know, we can look back. It marked that decade, but it becomes much more important the decade after as we get into the 2010s. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. And obviously the beginning of that is defined by Obama and the Great Recession and the slow recovery from it, and then also – the rise, just like Clinton was partially defined by the rise of the Republican opposition to him, I think Obama and the Obama era has been defined also by the rise of the Tea Party.
Yeah, Obama's ability to accomplish what he wants to accomplish runs into brick walls in 2010 in the midterm elections when he loses the House. And that is in byproduct. It's a byproduct of his attempts to try and pass Obamacare and to pass a cap and trade bill to deal with climate change. And yeah, his agenda for the rest of his 6 years is really defined by his ability to do things through executive action as opposed to congressional efforts. And it does lead to the rise of the Tea Party. It leads to, you know, the populism message that we see here with Donald Trump in 2016. But there, in those early 2010 years, Obama's ability to deliver on what he promised. I mean, it is more of, I think, in a large degree. I mean, he has big accomplishments on the executive front and in his international negotiations, whether it be Iran and the nuclear deal or the Paris Accord and the climate front. It is certainly not the ambitious agenda that he wanted, and I think that that is completely a part of losing the House to Republicans in 2010, and that would stay that way obviously until 2018 when the House finally flips back to Democrats.
And in between, of course, we get the rise of Trump and the Trump administration. And now, Darren, it's a line that winds around and you know doubles back on itself in some cases. But can you draw the line for us between the events of Obama's presidency and the Republican reaction to it and leading into and creating the Trump era?
Yeah, I think that there was – I mean, Donald Trump is a small figure in the Obama era, but it's an important one. I mean, remember, Donald Trump is sort of trolling Barack Obama, saying he's not really born in America. The rise of birtherism, the rise of conspiracy theories in American discourse. You know, Donald Trump holds a press conference that's carried live on CNN where he's like demanding the release of Barack Obama's birth certificate. And, you know, I think the mainstream media has a hard time trying to – I mean, they gave him obviously a huge megaphone to let him have these kinds of conversations on national television. But in turn, you see the media grappling with this, and you see Americans grappling with how do you deal with someone who's saying the sky isn't blue. And that is – the Trump era in a nutshell, and that is the success that he has had winning the 2016 presidential election and turning very blue states, you know, into Trump states. And you know, he's riding a wave that the Tea Party embodied. He's riding a wave that actually, if you want to back up a decade to Sarah Palin in 2008 as the vice presidential nominee that John McCain maybe unwillingly picks, but he picks to sort of add to that ticket. You know, she's a celebrity in her own right after John McCain loses that 2008 election, and she's the, you know, I think the fuel to the Tea Party of 2010 and the populism that you continue to see for the next several years into the election, where Hillary Clinton, you know, from the 90s goes down to Donald Trump here in 2016. I mean, you know, it's fascinating because Donald Trump has his rise in tabloid politics in the 1980s as well. So these four decades definitely are all connected in so many ways with so many people who are, you know, continuing players throughout them.
Darren, do you think when people look back on this decade that they are going to think more about Obama, who was president for more of it, or about Trump, whose campaign and election wrenched these 10 years in a totally different direction?
That's a great question. I think it's going to be a combination. These two men are going to be connected in history forever. And yes, Barack Obama was president for two more years than Donald Trump will have been.
Yeah, I mean, part of it's a silly question, right? Because no one has to just look at the decade and kind of cut off their consideration.
Well, I think in the 80s, you do see Ronald Reagan. I mean, that is who we think about. In the 90s, you do think about Bill Clinton as opposed to George H.W. Bush, who kind of falls away. But I think these two men are inherently going to be connected because Donald Trump is a byproduct of Barack Obama. And I'm sure Barack Obama would like his legacy to be left untouched by the Donald Trump era. But absolutely, that's not the case. I mean, everything that Donald Trump has been about has been ripping apart piece by piece the Barack Obama agenda, whether it be the Affordable Care Act or the Iran nuclear deal, the Paris Accords. You know, the signature achievements of Obama have been one by one at every agency, you know, peeled back. And obviously, as we think about the 2020s and whether it starts with a Democratic or Republican president, and we'll find that out soon enough, we'll swing back perhaps in the other direction with a Democratic president who puts all those Obama policies back in place, or it's four more years of Donald Trump and a much more, you know, a Trump fingerprint that will be, you know, left in both international and domestic politics.
So let's try and peer into the future a little bit at the 2020s. We obviously end this last year, the 2010s, with impeachment. We're going to start the next year with a Senate trial. There's this big question of what exactly Trump represents in the sweep of American history. Does he represent the continuation of a trend, a completely new normal, an aberration? I have no idea. But then, you know, there's also some of the cultural things that have been happening in the back half of the 2010s that could pave the way for all sorts of things that could define the 2020s, the Me Too movement, the rise of a new criminal justice reform movement. It could go on and on.
Crystal ball for this one. It is really fun to think about, and we should come back in 10 years and retape this and think about our predictions here. So, I mean, you know, I think technology is a theme throughout this, you know, whether it be the rise of video games in the 1980s and people all spending time in arcades, to the rise of social media in the 2000s, the internet. I mean, we consume news and we consume information, and we're all, I mean, I just think back to when I arrived in Washington and you would ride on the metro and you'd look around, people would be, you know, looking up and holding newspapers. Now you pull into any train station and everyone's head is buried in their phone, and we're all just kind of living in our own worlds and our own personal channels.
You know, of course, Darren, one thing we do know about the 2020s is that at some point during it, the post-Trump era is going to start. We don't know exactly when. Obviously, there's the election happening right now this year. Or it could be in 2024 after a two-term presidency. But we don't know exactly when it'll happen, but we know it will happen. And you know, we have some sense of how the parties have evolved during his presidency, but we don't exactly know how that will come after. Each president kind of makes their own coalition in ways that was a little bit surprising. Bush, Obama, now Trump. And so, you know, it's interesting to think through where we might go.
Yeah, the roads go in several directions, and they all hinge on November of 2020. I mean, we could end up in a all-Republican world to start the decade, or we could end up in an all-Democratic world. We just really – this is going to be an election that will be defined, obviously, by what voters decide here come November. I mean, if it is the Trump direction and it is a Republican presidency with the Republican House and Senate, then I think the Democrats begin the decade really rethinking what they are about. I mean, they will have just gone through a primary season and a general election where they could not take out Donald Trump despite everything that Donald Trump has been about for the last 4 years, despite an impeachment mechanism and a constitutional process that did not work the way maybe the Democrats would have liked it to. and they will be grappling with who their fresh faces will be, you know, in another 4 years, and you know whether they really do connect with the same constituencies that they did previously, the blue collar voters of you know the Midwest, and you know is the Democratic Party just a party of the coasts? And I think, again, if they win the presidency, and that would force the Republican Party into some dramatic rethinking that will either happen in 2020 or it'll happen in 2024, but it'll be sort of the post-Trump era, yeah.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, no matter which party wins and loses the 2020 election, it's hard at this point to say that they wouldn't have been able to see the why coming, right? And maybe that's
It turns on like 150 people in Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, that's true too, right? But it seems like we kind of understand the political fault lines right now. It's just a question of you know who's able to best channel those concerns and also whether people want to listen to them in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, there's a razor's edge here that is just going to continue no matter who wins this 2020 election too. It's a divided America. Two very different worlds that are seeing everything from politics to culture to you know world affairs and the role of the United States, whether it be populism and nationalism, that the way that the Trump you know era has been about, or is it the era that the Democrats have been pushing, whether it be in the Obama era of larger government and the government trying to help in international coalitions? And I think you know, it's very possible the 2020s are going to be defined by a continuing you know, divergence of these two Americas into this next decade. That's how it feels right now. I'll be really interested to talk to my 2029, 2030 self to see if that indeed happens. I mean, you know, one question that we're contemplating now as we deal with impeachment and the fact that it seems like it's headed the way it is, you know, is our democracy in demise and is the United States no longer the global world leader? And I think that you know, the constitutional system that we have right now, people are certainly wondering whether it's equipped for a president like Donald Trump. And that is something that we will be grappling with, I think, for the next many years. You saw it in the impeachment debate just now of just two completely different worlds operating and defining what the Constitution means, what the Founding Fathers, I think two different versions of what Alexander Hamilton was talking about in the Federalist Papers. And so, you know, you couldn't get much more divided as we seem to be right now. And I guess it might you know, require the end of the Trump era, whether it happens in 2020 or 2024. I don't know that we're going to get back to a quote unquote normalcy period or, you know, a period of unification in the country. It doesn't seem like it. But, you know, who knows what's around the corner in terms of domestic or foreign affairs that could bring people together. The Star Wars trilogy is ending, so that's kind of not going to do it.
Well, Darren, thank you so much for hopping in this time machine for us and running us through what we've done a good half century here. It's not bad for a day's work.
We have. I feel very old, but it is very fun. It's been a great exercise to just think through our time on this planet. It's short.
Thanks, Darren. Happy 2020.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
And as always, a big thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in this week. Our producer this week is Annie Reese, with help from Jenny Ament. Bill Cookman is our illustrator. If you like the Nerdcast and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please do us a favor and leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. Once again, thanks for listening. Happy 2020. We'll talk to you again next week.